Do you still feel for your life? You have any questions, Mr. Walker? Any comments?
Have you been told not to call?
Have you been told not to say anything? How do you feel about being back in the state of Arkansas?
I don't know. I'd rather be in Philadelphia.
That will be explained in just a minute. First, let me welcome Randy Dixon from the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History into the studio.
My goodness. It's nice to see your face.
Ditto. And we haven't done this face-to-face in a long time.
Oh, well, more than a year.
Yeah. And we're both fully vaccinated.
Yes.
So
bulletproof.
Well,
maybe.
Yes. And for this sort of restart of our face-to-face conversations for Pryor Center Profiles, we're going to have a conclusion.
Yes, we're finally going to wrap up the saga of James Dean Walker.
Our story thus far?
Well, he was a two-time convicted cop killer who escaped and was caught out west in Nevada. And
after 4 years.
Yes, he had been on the lam for 4 years. And, well, actually, Jim Pitcock can kind of summarize the whole thing in this report. When he went out to Nevada right after James Dean Walker was captured and had this exclusive report for KATV.
Walker was arrested in September for selling drugs. During a routine fingerprint check, police determined Walker, who had identified himself as James Bennett Simpson, was actually an escapee from the Arkansas prison convicted of killing North Little Rock policeman Gerald Vaughn in 1963. Walker escaped from Arkansas in 1975 after failing to return from a furlough at Wynn. Instead, he had gone to Memphis, caught a plane, and flew to California. He settled in this resort community several months later. He worked at a shoe repair shop less than a mile from the county sheriff's office. He would often go to San Francisco, however. He says he was never recognized.
It's Jim Pitcock, longtime reporter and news director for KATV, talking about this James Dean Walker saga. They find him in Nevada. There's the extradition process. Finally, he is back in Arkansas.
Yes, he was fighting it for about 2 months. And was unsuccessful, as Jim Pitcock predicted. Mm. And yes, he was extradited to Arkansas.
I hope nothing happens. No one's mistreated me at all since I've been back these past 4 days. I'm at the Pine Bluff unit, and everyone there has treated me very fairly. Mr. Dobbs assures me that no one's going to bother me, and at this point I have to be willing to accept his assurances.
So, as you can imagine, here you have a twice convicted, once sentenced to death escapee back in the state. Mm-hmm. This is a huge, huge story.
Oh, it did. And it was a media circus. Reporter for KATV Randy Weber has this stand-up report.
James Dean Walker's stay here in Pine Bluff will be indefinite. Prison officials will not say when he'll be transferred back to the Cummins unit, but Mr. Griffin says once he's transferred back, the man that generated so much publicity will be treated like any other inmate. This is Randy Weber in Pine Bluff reporting for News Scene 7.
It's not quite over, though, is it, this whole story, just because he's back, he's been extradited back to Arkansas?
Right, right. He's wanting a third trial. And here is a it was such a big deal that KATV would interrupt programming whenever there was some sort of development in the case.
Mr. Walker, on the third trial, keeping in mind that you had two already, what are you hoping for? What main bit of evidence that could
I can't
examine?
Comment on this. You have to talk this over with the lawyers. We've got a mountain of evidence right now that could exonerate me. And so you'll have to discuss this with the attorneys.
Without being specific, what area are you looking at?
Evidence that has been tampered with and altered, perjured testimony given, bias and prejudice by the trial judge, witnesses intimidated. You can just about dig into the pile and pull out anything you want. There were 59 errors in my last conviction, so this gives you a little bit of an idea of what we're looking at, but talk to the attorneys about that.
Of course, this is still well before even cable television's sort of influence into the ratings or the viewership. I mean, everyone was still watching broadcast local news for
right.
information.
Right, and it had to be a pretty big deal if you're going to interrupt one life to live or something like that.
Right.
And KTV was serious enough about news that we wouldn't hesitate to interrupt programming. We would get some calls, you know,
sure.
but we thought it was important enough. And it did go before the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals. And again, we interrupt programming, and here's Steve Barnes and Amy Oliver.
The following is a special bulletin from News Scene 7.
Good morning. A new trial, a third trial. James Dean Walker will be tried once again or be set free by order of the 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. An opinion handed down just moments ago from the nine judges of the appeals court says that Mr. Walker should be given a third trial for the 1963 murder of a North Little Rock policeman or be set free within 60 days. News Scene's Amy Oliver is standing by at the federal courthouse at Little Rock. Amy?
Steve, we're still trying to decipher this 54-page opinion, but the most important part comes on page 36, and we'll quote the judges here. Accordingly, we conclude that James Dean Walker is entitled to habeas corpus relief, a new trial, and later on in the opinion it says that trial shall be granted within 60 days. It was believed that Justice Richard Arnold of Little Rock would be the swing vote, so to speak, on the final decision here, and he was. He has a separate opinion, which we have not been able to go through. In the majority opinion, he has concluded affirmed the majority, and we have, as I said, not been able to read all of it through completely yet, but the decision again, 5-4.
So, wow, a third trial. I mean, we once convicted, twice convicted, and now a third trial.
Yes, and it's been more than 2 decades.
Yeah, since the crime.
Right. So, you know, what happens to evidence? What happens to witnesses? It's a little tough to try. And I think Deborah Mathis, who was a reporter for Channel 7, really summed things up. But he was let free. He did not stand trial again.
By the time James Dean Walker went free on Election Day, the storms of protest had calmed to a drizzle. Chris Piazza, the man who would have prosecuted Walker a third time, had reluctantly accepted what time had done, wilted away the evidence, the witnesses, and their recollections he needed to make a conviction of murder against Walker. Time had taken its toll on Maida Vaughn, too. It had been 23 and a half years since her husband, North Little Rock patrolman Gerald Vaughn, was fatally shot on the Old England Highway near North Little Rock in the pre-dawn hours of April 16, 1963. The 22-year-old Walker had been passing through town with the older Russell Compey, an Arkansas native just out of prison. The two got into a fracas at a local bar, fled in a rented car, were pulled over by police. Patrolman Gene Barentine frisked Compey. Vaughn approached Walker on the passenger side. There was gunfire. Walker was shot 5 times. Vaughn shot once in the heart. When Walker came to in the hospital a few days later, he was charged with first-degree murder. Compey was never charged in that case, but went to prison later for something else. For years, the theory was whispered about that Barentine had accidentally shot his partner in a panic. Barentine had emptied his gun on the scene, and those rumors were fueled when it was learned that Barentine had sawed off the barrel of his gun before it was run through ballistics tests. Walker's claim of innocence was buttressed by the condition of the gun he had with him that night. It was fully loaded. But police claimed he used a second gun to kill Vaughn, a police prototype found beneath the car. Walker maintained he had only one gun. Walker was convicted in 1964 and sentenced to die by electrocution. He got a second trial the next year and was given life in prison. While at Tucker Prison, Walker kept a clean record, won furlough rights, and used his free time speaking in churches to raise money for a chapel, the first ever built on an Arkansas prison compound. His applications for parole were countered by intensive police protests. Time after time, he was turned down. Then in 1975, denied parole again, Walker went on furlough one weekend and kept going to California. 4 years later, he was arrested there on a drug charge. Despite his alias, fingerprints identified him as the Arkansas escapee. He lost a two-year fight against extradition, but eventually won transfer to a federal prison near Oklahoma City, claiming that prison official Art Lockhart had threatened to kill him. Then, in February 1984, a diary kept by Russell Compey in prison was discovered by Compey's ex-wife. In it, Compey indicates he may have fired the shot that killed Officer Vaughn. That brought Walker a new hearing in federal court. Now he had an army of supporters, a battery of lawyers, and the new evidence, the Compey diary, and a newly discovered transcript of a secretly recorded conversation between Compey and his now-deceased sister, in which he again indicates he fired some shots that night in 1963. Unhappy with the federal order for a new trial after so many years, the state's attorney general and prosecutor Piazza vowed to prosecute. In the meantime, they agreed to give Walker his first taste of legitimate freedom by allowing him to make bond and wait for his trial in Nevada, where he had lived and worked during his escape time. A few days before Walker's third trial was to have begun, prosecuting and defense attorneys worked out a plea bargain. Walker pleaded guilty to manslaughter by vicarious liability, meaning he accepted responsibility for Vaughn's death, though maintained he didn't shoot him. And it was over. It took 23 minutes to end a case that spanned 23 years.
There are some minor similarities to this case in the West Memphis 3, in a way.
Yes, that's true, because he did end up pleading guilty.
Right.
Sort of without pleading guilty.
Right.
But he, you know, time served, and he was released. I did get to talk to Chris Piazza, who at the time was the prosecutor. Now he's a retired judge, but mm-hmm. I talked to him about it, and he was kind of between a rock and a hard place. He had almost an impossible task, and this is kind of what he said about it.
From the evidence we had, and you can't try a case 20 years later without evidence. I mean, it was an impossibility, and I thought that was the best thing that we could do, is to get him to plead guilty to the manslaughter and send him out to his folks in California that loved him.
That's Chris Piazza, who had the difficult job of prosecuting a 20-year-old case with evidence that wasn't still around.
Well, and he said it was a really tough decision to make, especially because the officer's widow was still alive.
Yeah.
And he had some long discussions with her about it, and she understood.
So what happened to James Dean Walker?
Well, that's the big question. I was talking to Mike Masterson, mm-hmm. the columnist and investigative reporter. He thinks he may have just gone on back out to California or gone to the East Coast, but he thinks he died just of natural causes.
Well, he would be. I mean,
yeah.
Because, I mean, the crime itself was in the 1960s.
Right. So he would be in his 70s or 80s.
Yeah, depending on, yeah. Well, I've said this before about this case. It's interesting to me how big a deal it was then and how little many of us remember about it now.
Right. And it was at the beginning of my broadcast career when he was captured out in Nevada, and right. I'd never heard of him.
Yeah.
Because it had been 4 years before that he had escaped, and then even longer. You know, I was 4 years old when he was convicted of the murder.
Right.
So it was ancient history then. So it was really interesting to go through and dig up all of this material.
Well, the benefit of history is you can put this 30-plus year saga, you know, into one place.
Right.
And have all the details from the initial shootout to the questioning whether it was his gun that was responsible for the murder, all the way up to that bizarre sort of third trial.
Right.
That didn't really
And it took us four parts.
Exactly, exactly. So now we'll move on. Any idea, and it's okay if you don't, what we'll talk about next Monday?
No idea.
That's fine. Randy Dixon is with the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. You can spend so much time finding out about Arkansas history by putting Pryor Center into a search engine. Randy, as always, thank you and welcome back.
Hey, it's great to be here in person.